Welcome to The Markets. Along with Max Armstrong and Mike Pearson, I'm Orion Samuelson. Dateline, Chicago, Illinois, Friday, April 17. And let's begin with what happened on this final trading day of the week. U.S. stocks higher on Friday and also posted gains for the week, boosted by a surge in Boeing shares, President Trump's plan to reopen the coronavirus-battered economy, and hopes of a potential drug by Gilead Sciences. I have been practicing pronunciation of this drug all day, and I'll give it a try. It probably won't be right, but the drug is called Remdesivir, and it's been showing some reaction positive to the coronavirus situation. But back to why we moved higher today. Boeing shares nearly 15% higher because that company announced it plans to restart commercial jet production in Washington State after halting operations last month due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then Gilead Sciences surged almost 10% following a report that patients with severe symptoms of COVID-19 had responded positively to its experimental drug. The report cited partial data from a University of Chicago hospital, 152 locations participating in the trial. But with no treatments or vaccines currently approved for the coronavirus, the news helped lift global equity markets. But Gilead said the totality of the data from the trial needed to be analyzed, and it expected to report results from a study testing the drug in severe COVID-19 patients at the end of this month. And quoting one analyst, if you can ultimately get a powerful treatment in lieu of a vaccine in the next couple of months, that would be good for cyclical stocks, anything economically sensitive. And he went on to say, if we can get some sort of back to normal in some way that the economy could start to function, the banks are going to rip higher. The S&P 500 is up nearly 30% from its March low point following a raft of global stimulus and hopes that the spread of the virus was nearing a peak in the United States. However, the S&P 500 remains about 15% off its all-time high, and strategists have warned of a deep economic slump from the halt in business activity and layoffs. Some U.S. states are expected to begin announcing timetables for lifting restrictions. Thursday, President Trump unveiled guidelines for a staggered three-stage process by states to lift restrictions on business and social life to curb the pandemic. But let's get to the numbers for today. The Dow Industrial Average surprised some traders. It ended 704 points higher. That's up 3%, ending the day and the week at 24,242. The S&P 500 gained 75 points, or 2.75%, to end the day and the week at 2,874. And the NASDAQ composite added 117 points. That's a little over 1.75%. To 86.50. And for the week, the Dow added 2.2%. The S&P 500 rose 3%. An analyst said the reopening guidelines provide some hope and optimism for folks and the market and the whole economy. It is indeed a start. And that from Gary Bradshaw, portfolio manager of Hodges Capital Management in Dallas. Bradshaw, who does own Boeing shares and the plane maker's news, he said was positive. I certainly haven't given up on that stock. But with the beginning of the quarterly earnings report season, Bank stocks took a heavy hit early in the week, but recovered after four straight days of losses triggered by lenders reporting several $1 billion in reserves to cover potential loan defaults. Apple down 1.4% today as Goldman Sachs downgraded the stock on expectations of a 36% drop in iPhone shipments during the company's fiscal third quarter, again because of the virus. But the U.S. stock market today certainly helped the global market because global stocks rallied after the President Trump plans to revive the coronavirus-led U.S. economy and a report about that clinical trial. And then Boeing's announcement also helped the global markets today because with the market's going through what they've been going through. It has been not a good time for banks particularly, but also for other segments of the economy. So let's move on to what we look for in the next week. We'll be back to a five-day trading week, and here's what we'll be looking for on Monday. The IBM company expected to post an increase in first quarter revenue boosted by its cloud offerings. The coronavirus outbreak has caused a spike in demand for cloud services as big organizations run their operations virtually. Halliburton Company scheduled to report its first quarter earnings on Monday. It's expected to report another quarter of declining revenue as North America, the largest market, as the company faces extreme slowdowns after the unprecedented crash in oil prices. Investors will look closely for impairments, comments on demand and activity, and cost-cutting actions as oil field services providers adjust their business to survive the low crude oil prices. Other activity next week, Netflix expected to report first quarter earnings on Tuesday. Investors believe the company will show that it has benefited from the spread of the virus, as overall television viewing has increased among audiences who are sheltering at home. U.S. existing home sales data for March is due on Tuesday, likely to have dipped to an adjusted annual rate of 5,300,000 units. That would be down from the previous month's total of 5,770,000 units. And the jobless claims data for the week ended April 13th, scheduled to be released on Thursday, and it is expected to have dropped to 4 million from the 5,240,000 the previous week. IH Markit is expected to release U.S. Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index on the same day. It is likely to have gone down in the past month, and we will look at new home sales because new home sales likely to have dropped to an annual rate of 645,000 units in March, and that would be down from 765,000 units in February. Coca-Cola expected to report an increase in first quarter revenue on Tuesday, boosted by strong demand for its energy drinks and its sodas. U.S. insurer Travelers Companies is set to report first quarter results on Tuesday. That report will come before the markets open. And Delta Airlines due to report first quarter results on Wednesday. In an environment of virtually no passenger demand due to the global corona crisis. AT&T expected to report a decline in first quarter revenue on the same day, hurt by store closures and a dip in spending due to the virus. Baker Hughes Company, expected to post a lower first quarter profit on Wednesday, hit by a slowdown in North American production activity. Investors will be looking for impairments or updates to Baker's cost-cutting strategy after bellwether Schlumberger said customers are cutting back on spending after oil prices crashed in March. Transatlantic exchange operator NASDAQ expected to report on Wednesday an increase in first quarter earnings as trading volume surged in the period because of sharp increases in market volatility. Southwest Airlines is due to report first quarter results on Thursday, the company likely to show the initial impact of the virus pandemic on earnings and travel demand. And Wall Street expects Intel Corporation to report a rise in first quarter revenue on Thursday. Eli Lilly and Company is slated to post first quarter results on Thursday as we roll along with the quarterly report season. And one more, Verizon Communications expected to post an increase in first quarter revenue at a time when the coronavirus gives a boost to telecom providers with more people staying at home, and investors will be looking at commentary on the impact of store closures and on the future of 5G. Taking a look at oil prices, Brent crude ended the day at $18.27 a barrel, down 8% or $1.60 a barrel. Brent crude futures settled at $28.08 a barrel. That was just 26 cents higher for the day. We're going to take a look at what happened in the commodity world this week when we continue with Mike Pearson and his guest, Tommy Grisafi of the Advanced Trading Company, and they're going to talk about energy and livestock futures when we continue on the markets.
Your best defense against breast cancer is a mammogram. I'm Dr. Sandy Goldberg, a breast cancer survivor and founder of a Silver Lining Foundation. And early detection saved my life. Are you uninsured? Are you underinsured? Are you a survivor and need follow-up testing? Feel like you have nowhere to turn? Times are tough, but getting a mammogram shouldn't be. Call us at 312-345-1322. A Silver Lining Foundation is here to help.
We could go lower, and I hate to say that, but obviously markets can go lower. Take crude oil, for example, Mike. 2 weeks ago, the CME group listed negative options. So if you thought crude could go below zero, you can buy a minus $2 put. As a young trader at the Board of Trade, I once bought a commodity real cheap, and I said, how low could it go, zero? And one of the older traders next to me said, hey, kid, once potatoes went to zero, and they charged the people for the bag. So be careful. Markets are cheap. Think about where pork was a year ago. A year ago, I was counseling growers on why they need to stay hedged and keep making these huge margin calls because they were at such profitable levels. So a year ago, we were caught short at 80 and 90. They're trading 100. Obviously, everyone likes to sell above their cost production. That's not even close to reality right now.
No, it isn't. And we saw that weakness in the hog market spill over into cattle early in the week. And then we had a decent midweek rally. Tommy, what changed the market sentiment there on Tuesday and Wednesday of this week? Cattle led and then hogs followed higher. What was the good news?
One thing is that the Dow Jones is, as of a few days ago, 6,000 points off its low. So you take that, the Dow Jones hit almost 30,000 earlier in the year. It went all the way down to the lower 18,000s, and we hit a 24,000 print the other day. You go from 18,000 to 24, the NASDAQ market, you see stocks like Amazon making all-time highs, and you kind of start to sit back in your chair, Mike, and say, the world's not ending. It's just a really rough time for some businesses. One of the things we've been looking at is when you talk cattle and hogs, you just can't talk about front month. Keep an eye on your back month. Keep an eye for the producers out there if you want something optimistic. What's it going to look like, Mike, when restaurants start having to reorder? My family and my wife's family was in the restaurant business. They currently have no inventory. When we get the go-ahead to open up, we're going to have the consumer that's consuming above normal amount of meat right now just through cooking at home. And then you're going to have all those restaurants reorder. That's the play I'm looking for, Mike. That's the optimism I want to leave the rancher, or the hog grower with is things will get better. And when they do, you watch out. Several people have told me, I just don't see how this market can rally. And it can.
Absolutely. Markets can always surprise. Tommy, when you're looking for that optimism, do you go to late summer, early fall? Are you looking at 2021? What's your timeline?
That's a million-dollar question, Mike, because as you watch what it looks like for countries, or not countries, but states to open, we had the mayor of L.A. said that he didn't think he'd see any sports or any concerts in 2020. That doesn't make you think you want a June product, right? So I kind of like that Jan-Feb price range, and that I feel a little safer, for someone who has that time frame. Obviously, with meats, you can't store them, Mike. So when that little piggy needs to go to the market, he needs to go.
Sell them or smell them, they say in the meat markets. Tommy, I like that there's some optimism out there as we look down the line. Let's talk grains. We had some bad news for ethanol production earlier this week. Probably wasn't a huge shock, but what did that do to the markets? Have we really wiped out any bullish sentiment in corn?
Markets tend to bottom when things look their worst, right? So when companies look like they're going to go bankrupt, Uncle Warren Buffett just comes in and gobbles it all up, right? And then the price of it doubles and triples. I had several farmers call me the other day and say they just didn't see how corn could rally. Last year, a year ago, we were at 420 and they thought it was going to go higher. So you get 10 farmers to call you and say they can't see how this market goes up, and magically you come back 3 months, 6 months from now and we're higher. Obviously, your risk is that the markets keep going lower. We do have a floor through crop insurance. I think people, Mike, are going to start leaning on that pretty hard. And we'll have to keep an eye on the prevent plant numbers up in North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, for several reasons, not only through that the weather, but the health of workers. If we have some more outbreaks like we had recently this week in South Dakota, you may see some crops not get planted just for health and safety reasons.
Absolutely, Tommy. And I know you do a lot of work up in the Dakotas. When you're talking to folks on the ground there, how wet is it? Paint a picture for our listeners who are outside that northern corn belt.
It's interesting, Mike, because everyone's still focusing that it's really wet, but we had one of the driest February and Marches in history in Fargo. They're still combining corn. One of the hardest things of helping a northern producer to get hedged in 20 or 21 is their 19 crop is still in the ground, probably a little bit more than you would think. And so the combination of a poor basis, a poor flat price, poor weather conditions, I don't know how motivated growers are going to be to get that crop off or able to turn around and get that new crop back in the ground. It's pretty hard to get motivated when you're looking at a dollar a loss per bushel, corn and beans.
Oh, absolutely. And Tommy, you mentioned soybeans there. I want to go back to a topic we haven't discussed really since coronavirus broke out, and that's the Chinese trade deal. Are we seeing the Chinese make any significant soybean purchases here in the U.S.?
A little bit nibbling, a little bit of wheat purchases. That was exciting. But when you look at the markets, you wouldn't think they were in our markets buying. As we progress, they have a South American harvest. They have plenty of crop there. They're getting so good at growing beans down there in South America. Matter of fact, Mike, they grow more than us. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings, but they're the real deal. So we're the real deal, too, but we need someone to buy our product. And, it shows up in the basis. When China comes in the PNW or the Gulf, you'll see it more in the cash price reflected, not necessarily in the futures right now. Those funds are starting to gear up, starting to sell us again at the Chicago Board of Trade, and obviously China's buying the cash market. So there's a little room to flex to keep an eye on that Gulf bid and the PNW bid. That's your real market.
All right, keep an eye on the markets that matter. Tommy, we got about 30 seconds left. Wheat market rallied incredibly heading into the coronavirus scare. Now it's selling off. How low does Chicago wheat go?
Wheat's a very hard thing to trade. I spent most of my career in the corn pit, and I used to turn around and look at those guys in the wheat. I thought they were crazy. Wheat's grown in almost every country in the world. Wheat's harvested almost every day during the year. It's not like a corn crop or a bean crop where you have a South American or North American. Wheat's funny. Anytime it gets to even close to break even, you should be selling, hedging, or at least protecting with a put option wheat, because when it starts to go and it loses its bid, Mike, it'll look no different than a hog or cattle chart.
That's right. Protect your business. Tommy Grazoffi from Advanced Trading, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thank you all. Stay safe.
The agricultural community has been battered by the loss of markets with these national school lunch program that is the biggest fluid milk buyer in the country, pretty well shut down because schools are shut down. So let's take a closer look at some of the consumer impact on agriculture, and we do that with Max Armstrong.
Orion, this week in my neighborhood, they were selling chicken out of the back of semi-trucks. Yeah, chicken processor had the trucks, the trailers lined up. They would take them into a community. They would advertise it on their website, and they were selling 40-pound cases of boneless chicken breasts, of chicken legs, also of wings. They were selling those, too, and finding very good demand. Long lines of cars from people wanting to buy at $45 a case these cases of chickens. There have been some dramatic changes, of course, throughout the meat chain. And consultant Catherine Miller talked with me about that this week. She's based in Oklahoma and works with the food industry and meat acquisition.
Every day is a new day. We literally wake up in a new universe. What happened yesterday won't happen today, and the news stories from today won't be relevant again tomorrow. Change is inevitable at this point, and you know, those of us who are able to adapt and kind of overcome with what the market is throwing at us, I think that we're going to see some really interesting new ways of business come out of this. But in the change, this period, our supply channels, we're really struggling to adapt to what consumers are needing and what the market will allow us to do. It's been an interesting few weeks for sure.
I hate to use the term because it's used so much, thinking out of the box, but really that's what we're seeing now, isn't it? People coming up with ideas that we would have never thought of before.
You know, I think what's interesting is that in the last 4 weeks, it's made startups of every company. Every boardroom in America is having to rethink how they go to market. And it really leveled the playing field so that those who are able to adapt and able to make quick changes, they're really seeing a new way to go to market. And those who are really stuck in the same patterns of, no, this is how we do things and this is how it's always been, they're going to really continue to struggle.
Food service. You work closely with those folks. That has been an industry just decimated. Isn't there going to be a segment of food service that just won't come back?
You know, the longer this goes on, the worse those numbers look. At this point, we're pretty much anticipating that 50% of, you know, independent restaurants probably won't be able to reopen their doors. You know, any business that has an extended period of time when their revenue goes to zero and yet they still have bills to pay, that, you know, that's going to take a hit. We're going to see some titans of industry really fall on the food service side, and I think we'll be surprised at what corners that comes out of. I don't think anyone is safe. Of course, your national chains, your Darden's of the world, they'll be a little bit more insulated because they have a bigger balance sheet to work off of. And so in the first weeks, this really hit your mom and pop, your neighborhood restaurants. But the longer this goes on, I think the deeper that cut's going to get.
Some folks were a little bit uneasy about the supplies of cattle and hogs we had in the United States watching the expansion take place. It's turned out to be quite burdensome, hasn't it?
You know, we'd been in an unprecedented time of expansion, both on the hog and cattle side. On the hog side, we'd added 100,000 more chain spaces, anticipating China to really come on board and start buying some hog supplies. And while exports have remained solid, on the pork side at least, what has happened in domestic food service has really negated that storyline. And so while for us it's awful to watch plants close and what that means for live animal values, you know, that's, and what that in turn is going to mean at the consumer level in the next few weeks, for the industry, where every day we're in uncharted waters there. I have no idea where live animal values go. For a lot of us, we've always joked that it can't go to zero. And unfortunately, we're kind of seeing that. One person said that the market has a paddle big enough to get all of us. And I think that we're experiencing that right now. On the cattle side, there's not a bottom yet, not in fed cattle or in cull cows. And I think that every day that this continues to go on, we're going to see those markets get softer and softer. You know, we live in a supply-based economy, and right now we have more fed cattle and more fed hogs than ever before in history. And with 45% of our demand point gone in terms of the restaurant industry being closed, that's not something that we can quickly recover from.
That's Catherine Miller, meat industry consultant who works mainly for the food service industry, Orion.
As we take a look at some other of the stories that affected agriculture, the Trump administration announced this week that it plans to buy milk and meat to help farmers that have been hit by the coronavirus. The purchases will amount to about $15.5 billion. That decision comes amid rising pressure from the U.S. farm lobby for government purchases as growers and ranchers struggle to get their goods to market because of the disruptions caused by the pandemic. And, of course, that has forced some dairy farmers to actually dump milk, and it has forced the meat industry, because of the coronavirus that's impacting the workers in meat processing plants, that it has hampered somewhat their ability to get product from the feed yard to the meat counter at the supermarket. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue this week unveiled a one-stop shop of federal programs that can be used by rural communities, organizations, and individuals impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. It's called the COVID-19 Federal Rural Resource Guide. And it's designed to help the leadership of rural communities and organizations to get through these difficult times, along with what I talked about earlier, the fact that the Department of Agriculture will be buying commodities again to take some of the commodities off the market. As we ended the week, we take a look at the prices for the grains and livestock and the futures market activity at the Board of Trade, first of all, because wheat futures ended the week, the July contract ended the week up 4¾ cents a bushel, and the July corn contract ended the week up 3½ cents a bushel. Soybeans, on the other hand, traded lower. The July soybean contract down 4¾ cents a bushel. Livestock futures, we ended up today with a fairly green screen for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange prices. The June lean hog contract ended with a gain of 42 cents a hundredweight. The June live cattle contract ended 20 cents higher, and the April feeder cattle contract ended the day and the week up $1.27 a hundredweight. So a little bit of help to wrap up the week in the agricultural community. You know, there are a couple of other industries that I deem as agriculture. You may not, but horse racing, the thoroughbred horse industry, is faced with some major challenges, too. I call that an agricultural industry because it has horses and it consumes quite a bit of food. But the National Thoroughbred Racing Commission says there is concern if there can't be some racing activity because of the gathering of crowds. Oh, and if you're an agricultural producer, the Farm Bureau this week encouraged farmers to participate in the USDA labor survey. The American Farm Bureau urging farmers to respond to that survey about farm workers' hours and wages. That survey information is used to provide accurate measures of the farm labor force and wages paid, which affect labor program wage rates, such as the adverse effect wage rate. In addition, USDA and the Department of Labor use the data to estimate the demand for and the availability of seasoned agricultural workers. The National Agricultural Statistics Service 2020 Agricultural Labor Survey was mailed to almost 38,000 randomly selected farms and ranches that had previously reported having paid farm labor. So the April questionnaire asks for information covering two reference weeks, January 12 through 18 and April 12 through 18. So again, that is information that will not be shared on an individual basis with anybody, but it's used by the Labor Department and the Department of Agriculture to figure out where we stand with wages and activity on the labor market for farmers and ranchers. Well, we're out of time. We do that every week at about this time. But as always, thank you for joining us, and we look forward to your company next week on The Markets.